Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on a Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt. Pride of Chicago is Danny Burke. Mr. Will Bauer is, did he wipe the board down? Is he one of these clean, neat freaks? He's just kind of shaking his head. Hey, we're still shaking our head with Nebraska basketball. We'll spend plenty of time and get into it. We'll talk some Nebraska football with Parker Gabriel of the Journal Star in 1 hour. And we'll get in touch with Husker Hoops' Jacob Padilla in about 15 minutes. You're welcome to sound off. Room for you can dial up 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Find us on Twitter. Give us a follow at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hail Varsity. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. So this will calm your fears. Joe Lunardi, Bracketology, Session 1, release. Are you ready? Maybe you saw it. And what you have is this. Out of the East, stop me if you've heard this before, Duke is your one seed. But in that East region, let me know if this jogs your memory with Nebraska in 2018, 2019, Maryland, Wisconsin, Seton Hall, Texas Tech, Ohio State. That is the Nebraska region. Maryland a 4 seed, Whiskey a 6, Seton Hall at 11, Tech a 3, the Buckeyes for now at a 10 seed. Some of these teams are status quo. Some have the green arrow up. Some have the bad red arrow down. Ohio State's got one of those bad red arrows down. Out of the West, Sparty projected right now as we get into February as the top seed, a one seed out of the West. In the South, Indiana and Iowa both show up. Iowa's a 6 seed. Indiana is a 9 seed. Indiana, again, an evil red arrow pointing downward. In the Midwest, Purdue a 5. Nebraska's got a trip to Boilermaker land coming up. Minnesota in a play-in game as an 11 seed. Michigan a 2 seed. Nebraska is in the Midwest region coming in an 8-9 matchup against Florida State. Both Florida State and Nebraska have those evil red arrows pointing down. I don't know if Byron Bennett's going to throw the ball up when it comes to tip-off. Sad memory there. No Clemson. No Creighton. So, with this first crop report, you're still in the dance. Maryland's in. Wisconsin's in. Seton Hall's in. Nebraska's got a loaded lineup of teams they've played. They've played well against. Some they've beat. Some they could beat. It's right there for Nebraska. So, I guess what I'm asking, after you've thought about it here, the unraveling point of the year. I think we're going to be able to look back and say, let's circle the Rutgers game of ride or die. Okay? Got to win Saturday. Got to win Tuesday. Got to go steal one of the three with Sparty, with Michigan, with Purdue. Got to beat Maryland at home on the second signing day. It's there. Will it happen? And I think this Nebraska basketball team is bipolar enough to keep you going back to your fridge to pour drinks out of anger and out of joy. An 8 seed right now. Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago. When I say Nebraska basketball 8 seed, how does that grab you, son? Are you like, eh? Or are you like, oh, okay, that makes some sense?
I mean, you and I yesterday, we were kind of saying that this team might not even deserve to be a bubble team. So it's a little bit of a surprise to me. It's a relief, if anything.
Sure. Okay. So do you feel relieved as a Nebraska basketball fan?
I think this is
your answer is no. Pass more drugs.
But it's a good sign because it seems like they're getting more of that national recognition now. You know, they understand the talent's there. They've just had these tough matchups, these tough games on the road that they've blown. So they see the potential there when they build these big leads. But being unable to close them out is why they're still, you know, a little bit low. But being able to give those props right now is a good sign for Nebraska, still being an 8 seed. And I think it's also because they understand that they're able to win these upcoming games. Like we were saying yesterday, too, they have a chance to win 4 games in a row here with the home court advantage.
Well, let's just be real. Being in the Big Ten punished Nebraska last year, right? Finishing 4th in the Big Ten was no big deal, apparently. The Big Ten is a monster this year with Maryland and Wisconsin and Ohio State and Sparty and in Indiana and Iowa and Minnesota and Purdue and Nebraska. That's 9 freaking teams. That's pretty impressive. I think it's fair to say Monday night is potentially your unraveling point. Do you get your bleep together and move forward? Jacob Bedilla in 10 minutes, get his take on things. The rundown is this. Nebraska in the net rankings, I think they're still 15th. They're number 60 with the RPI, which sucks. But no one uses the RPI anymore, or at least this year. It's the net ranking, so you're still a top 15 squad. The Rutgers loss, and Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV tweeted this out. The Rutgers loss, I thought, was like quad 4. Quad 4 is like DEFCON 2, right? That's equals if you're doing the theorem here. It got moved to a quad 3. So it's a bad, awful, what are you doing loss. But it's not as bad as it could have been for Nebraska. We'll get into some football thoughts here, too, with Scott Frost, his contract, his assistance, the second signing day. So we'll for sure hit that. Some of the targets out there for Nebraska. 4 spots left for 2019. I want to spend a few minutes here on basketball. Listen, you've got a bad loss. You're 2-5 in quad 1 opportunities. But the two are nice. One's a road win. And you can play the old Schmidt bingo drinking game when it comes to reference points of Maryland, Iowa, and Michigan State. God, it would have been nice to have one of those three. And you had two of those three right there for you, right? I mean, all three were winnable. I don't want to say you gave away. You were neck and neck with Iowa, right? But you were up on Maryland, put them down in that situation, and you didn't do it. The broader discussion is this, and really good stuff from the Hail Varsity mailbag that we'll get into. And you had a bunch of readers and .com readers and magazine readers. Every week it's the mail call, and I love the mailbag. And the question is out there about, you know, the big picture of Nebraska basketball. What should it be? I grew up in an era where you had some guys that went to the NBA, guys that played a long time in the NBA, and you maybe didn't know how long they could get a look in the NBA, but we're talking a decade plus with Mikey Moore, Eric Piatkowski, and Eric Strickland, okay? Those guys were all on a team together. And you have other guys that were fringe NBA or played ball in Europe. And you had a golden era of Nebraska basketball where it was the Big 8 and then the Big 12, but Nebraska and Ty Lue, God, can't forget him. But you had guys like that find their way to Lincoln because of Danny Nee and his assistance. So it can be done. You have a insanely awesome arena, a practice facility. You're in the Big 10. Nebraska is still a football school, okay? But it's not necessarily a football school with a basketball problem anymore. You've seen the ability to bring some high-end athletes here. Can you get them to hit their pinnacle, their peak, their ceiling on a run to the tournament? And the bigger picture and discussion here is about Tim Miles, is about what he's done with the program and what he still can do with this program, because listen, man, he's had prove it years to extend his contract beyond just the token year, right? It's hesitancy on the investment, right? It's Godfather 2. Michael Corleone doesn't want to give Hyman Roth the money for this casino that's supposed to go up in Havana. He didn't because the communists took over and Michael would have been out $1 million back in 1957. I think Nebraska basketball is a squad in a program that you can be knocking on that tournament door every 3 years. I'm not expecting Duke numbers. I'm not expecting Sparty numbers. But develop and build. Be patient enough to have an understanding that you're going to have kind of a dip year where you're hopefully you're competitive, but you just lose some games and you're around 500, or you'll be maybe 4 to 5 games under 500 in the Big Ten when it's at its normal strength or it's at its excessive strength. Just get that, right? You're going to have a dip year. Your dip year isn't the same as Michigan State or Michigan's dip year where they fall all the way to fourth. All right? But I think you can put a roster together, develop talent, have some talent, and then have years where you can transition and you may be a little bit down from a previous good year where you're an NCAA tournament team, but you still quasi-reload, and that's been the problem with Nebraska basketball. You've had guys here that are good enough to win a lot of games for you. Some, the 1 year you hit, last year you were close. But what do you follow up with if you got guys coming back, or what do you got waiting in the wings? And that's been the issue. It comes down to, you go back 7 years, and it's always easy to go hindsight and judge and armchair it. But how did you want to approach this? Did you want to approach this with a recruiting way that you're going to get high school talent and they're either great early or they need some seasoning? And I look at Glenn Watson, right? Glenn Watson's a guy that in the second year during the tournament year was a get for Nebraska, right? He was big. You inherited guys like Siobhan Shield and Ty Webster that are good and they're playing pro ball. They're earning a paycheck doing basketball, okay? And it worked out. You got a guy like Petaway and Walt that were pretty in Walt's situation he started as a freshman for a Florida team, right? Florida that's not far removed from national championships and Joakim Noah. And then you have a Bobby Knight recruit and Teran Petaway that was just gathering dust, and all of a sudden he's a 20-point-a-game guy. You get Andrew White that is earning the paycheck for the Atlanta Hawks. I about said Falcons. That's worse than saying San Diego Chargers. So you've been able to bring some dudes here. You've not been able to keep. You have Jacobson at Iowa State, 14 a game. He'd look awesome right now. Don't have him. You've had the effect of college basketball hit you. You've had people leave. You've had people leave and transfer. But the way you've gone about this construction process has left you very little room for any depth. And the develop may have been hit or miss on some situations. You had coaching turnover. And you right now are playing your dudes 38 minutes. You're five that pound for pound on paper can give any roster a headache on offense, allegedly. When they're on, when they're sharing, when they're shooting well. And you're going to have bad nights. You've been able to hang your hat for a year and a half, theoretically, defensively. Nebraska's had more outings with solid to great defense than bad defense, but we remember the bad outings with Rutgers scoring 76, Minnesota putting up 80-plus on you, and just not locking down. Part of that's fatigue or desire, right? So this is your armchair point, and the outcry there for the upset Nebraska basketball fans is, let's move on, let's get rid of our coach. Because it's just real easy to find a coach to come to Lincoln, Nebraska, and make them a consistent winner. That's not happened. You've had two, right? Miles has got you to the tournament, and Danny Nee did, okay? And I just laid out Danny Nee's NBA rosters. He had them. He did well with them. So what's out there, if you're the Nebraska basketball fan that has seen enough of Nebraska basketball under Tim Miles, I can hear the names you want. I can say that may work. Nothing's for sure. But is it even realistic to think you can get some of these guys? Are you going to be what you're going to be no matter what, no matter who's wearing the tie and the sport coat on the sideline because you're Nebraska basketball? Would it be better with somebody else? Some of you are ready to try. Some of you, maybe not so much. Because, well, you're being talked about and your tournament team as we talk right now. You just missed the tournament a year ago. And you've been to a tournament once under this guy. You don't want the 3.5 years of waiting. You need to be in contention. And I think your fear is that it's just always going to be inconsistent with the status quo right now at Nebraska, and you can find somebody that'll bring more consistency. That could be a bad thing. You can bring in and make a move, and it can be a real nightmare at head coach, where you don't have talent, you're still in the Big Ten vice grip, and, well, damn, 22-11 looks pretty good considering you're at a 10-win spot the next year. So it really comes down to a grass... Is it really greener discussion here? And Nebraska's still in contention. More hoops. Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com next.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Basketball Insider with HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Jacob Padilla with us at Jacob Padilla. Underscore Jacob, what a week it's been, and it's trudging forward, and it's 2 days after the Rutgers debacle. Were you nervous about that ball game going in for Nebraska?
Honestly, I was not. I did not expect that kind of performance out of them. Just everything I had seen from Rutgers, and knowing their best player was either going to be out or limited. I did not think this was a game that Nebraska would struggle with. I was wrong.
You and a lot of Nebraska fans, there's this pit in their stomach with this team. They want to fall in love with them, and then their heart gets broken, and then you want to dump them, and then they look great again. Do you have an explanation, my friend?
Not really, except for that's kind of the way it's been with Nebraska, and teams kind of follow in the lead or take on the personality of their best players. And Nebraska's best players have been inconsistent throughout their careers in Lincoln. And you start with James Palmer Jr. You look at that Rutgers game. Yeah, you let him in scoring 22 points, but he did not play well. And you go down to the stretch, game tied, they go down, and Nebraska has a chance to get a stop. Rutgers misses a shot, and Palmer doesn't box out. His man rushes in and knocks the ball away from Copeland. Rutgers gets it back, then they score. And down on the other end, they get the ball to Palmer off a curl. He goes up with a floater, misses, and then immediately fouls a guy with a minute 20 left in a two-point game. And that puts them at the line. Now they're up 4, and that was basically the game from there. So that's your best guy in big moments, not making smart, good basketball plays.
Jacob Padilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. What's your read on JPJ right now? Frustration, pressing, exhaustion? Why is he in this funk?
Yeah, I really don't know. Outside of, like I said, he's kind of been consistent his whole time. We saw this last year as well, where he had about a 10-game stretch of looking like one of the best players in the conference, and then struggled down the stretch, was hit or miss in the non-conference. So he's just been really up and down his whole career, and a lot of that has to do with the way he shoots and how streaky he is. And when you're a streaky shooter and you like to take a lot of jump shots, then that's going to lend itself to you being inconsistent. And Miles is kind of – he hasn't necessarily wanted to lean in all the way to – the fatigue excuse, and he seems to think his guys can handle it. But I do wonder if that is having an impact on them not making the plays, the little plays down the stretch, the boxing out That is something as simple as that. That takes effort. The ball goes up. You don't relax. You turn your head. You find a body, and then you go get the board. That's effort. That's I think everybody's played basketball. You know, you get a little tired. That's one of the first things that slips. Is you just kind of relax when you're not involved. And we're seeing little things like that, or guys not being able to hit shots late in game. Maybe not having the legs. So it's impossible to quantify that and know just how much impact it's having, but I do think there is something to that.
Chemistry-wise, do you think guys are still okay? And the reason I ask is I look at Palmer, and I know his dream is to play at the next level, and he has been so good for Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska's not sniffing bubble watch a year ago. Nebraska is not able to annihilate Creighton or get by against Clemson. He's been such a tone setter. And he's even been unselfish. I love the style he played with against Indiana. But he doesn't have to go for 25 a night. You've got four other starters that are very capable to get you double digits, and three others aside from Cope. Cope's kind of he's your standard issue, man. He is just consistent. He's going to get you good shots. They'll go in most of the time, and he'll battle his butt off down low, even if he's outweighed, right? I mean, you know he's all in for the team. Do you think there's some trust issues with the lineup there between teammates?
I don't think there's trust issues. I think that chemistry is fine in terms of the guys liking each other and getting along and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how great the chemistry is on the court in terms of guys being able to play with each other and off of each other and all that kind of thing. That's something that you would hope with 2 years with four guys playing together a lot of minutes, they would be better at that. But you'll just go, it seems like so often where guys are just kind of like trading, taking turns, kind of doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily get a lot of guys playing well at the same time, playing well off of each other. Heck, last time I was on, we talked about Roby coming off those two big games, and he's put up three bad single-digit games in a row. And so we wanted, oh, has he turned the corner? Well, no, 21 points on 23 shots over the last three games. And he's had four or five fouls in all three of those games. So they just can't quite figure out how to make it work with all these guys.
Well, and part of that is the players got to step up and make plays. Part of that is coaching as well. I mean, and that's been the issue is with Nebraska fans is every time there's something bad that happens, it's let's scream and fire Miles. Every time there's something good, you're all right with the guy. And that's kind of been a major topic with the HailVarsity.com mailbag. And what's the temperature been with you and around the office, Jacob? You're plugged into basketball, man. Is the fan base just done with Miles, or are they still in a little bit of wait-and-see mode because they know there's a lot of season left?
I think you always have your segments of both. There's a lot of Husker fans that are kind of eternal optimists, always supporting the program no matter what, no matter who it is. But, I mean, there are a lot of people that are anti-Miles at this point just based on everything they've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. And a game like this is just an excuse for them to kind of fire back up and voice their displeasure once again. So I don't know exactly what his approval rating is, but I don't think it's great. And we're seeing that because it's the same problems over and over again. And I think that's where you start to lose fans, when you can't really fix what the issues are. And when you lose games like this, especially coming off that Michigan State game where you had a chance to knock off a top 10 team and you can't get your team up to play, to bounce back from that and get back in the win column against a much less talented team. So those are all kind of on combination of the coaching and the players and their want to and kind of their mindset. And that also falls back on the coaching, the coaches being able to get those guys inspired, I guess you could say.
Jacob, let's talk Nebraska basketball big picture. Year two, Nebraska makes the tournament. Year three, they absolutely underachieve with a tournament roster. They started out 3-0 in the Big Ten with wins at Maryland. They beat Purdue, and they also got Iowa. I mean, they started out really well, okay? They finished, I think, 3-15 in 2016-2017. You have last year where they're a bubble team and had some good wins and didn't have enough opportunity down the stretch but played well on the road. And then there's this year where they're projected to be a top six Big Ten team, as good as the league is. They're struggling right now, two games under 500. That's a seven-year stretch with one tournament appearance, but arguably three or four tournament teams talent-wise. Does that speak for itself?
A little bit. I don't necessarily know if it's quite to that level in terms of talent-wise for the team. You look back at that tournament team, and really, they made one really nice run. They got hot at the right time, and that carried them to the tournament. The next year, you brought back those same pieces, but they didn't have that same magic. And, yeah, part of that's on the coaching again, but maybe the team wasn't quite as good as we thought it was the previous year based on that hot stretch. Mm-hmm. And over the last few years, ever since then, they've really struggled to develop, attain, and retain talent for players to build full rosters. And I think that's, even now, we're looking at it. Look at this bench right now and how little impact they're getting off the bench. So that goes back to guys that transferred away that they couldn't hold on to, guys that they didn't develop. So now you're relying on a handful of freshmen and sophomores, and those guys aren't quite ready to play the roles they need to play, at least in Miles' eyes. So now you're riding your starters 38 minutes a game and just trying to steal a minute here or there. So that all goes back to kind of the overall way they've run the program, and it really hurts when you have misses, whether it's recruiting, whether it's failing to develop guys, whether you have guys transfer out. When you don't have depth in the program, you can't field a full talented team. It's hard to win long term over the course of a conference season, and we've seen that with Nebraska over a few years now.
Well, and that was their niche from year one. Let's go get grad transfers. Let's go get transfer guys. That's how Nebraska is going to build their roster and get talent infusion, right? Versus the slow and steady build. You have different off ramps to take when you take over a program. Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob Padilla. Okay, so Derek Peterson tweeted this out. Nebraska 2-5 with quad one wins. You have the bad loss against Rutgers. You have the Maryland, Iowa, Sparty missed opportunity. And you have a chance to make it up at home and on the road. Real quick here, about a minute. Of these three teams, which team is Nebraska likely to get even, to get back at, and get that signature win? Purdue, Michigan State, or Michigan, or keep drinking Schmidt, neither?
Yeah, I definitely would say Purdue is the most likely of those three. I'm honestly not sure how great Purdue is. Michigan, man, that team is tough, and I just don't know how Nebraska is going to be able to score on them. They couldn't score on Michigan State. How are they going to score on Michigan? Mm-hmm. So those two games are really, those are going to be tough. But Purdue, I definitely think Nebraska can get one back there. And they're going to have to, because they got to get some of these wins. They're running out of time.
Last thought here, Ohio State, Nebraska Saturday. You feel okay about it? Is it a good matchup? About 30 seconds.
Yeah, it should be. Ohio State really surprised me with the start they got off to. But now we've seen they've lost, what, four in a row, including one to Rutgers. I think they're kind of falling back to what I thought they were going to be. And so this, especially coming off that Rutgers game, this is a game that Nebraska has to win. No excuses, no qualifiers. They have to win this game.
Jacob, thanks for the time today, man.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
It is Wednesday. That means it is Mike Shuhart time. Shuey is in studio. Wilderness Ridge thawed out. Let him get from 14th and Pine Lake region up here to Cornhusker. And he brought himself in a recruiting issue from Hail Varsity Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at that, you like that recruiting? We got signing day part deux coming up for during the Maryland game. You know, you got signing day, and then Maryland comes to town. Shuey, what's good? What's good, man? Good to see you.
Nice being here. I wish it would stop snowing, man. I'm over the snow.
No, I got nothing for you.
Yeah,
I mean,
over the snow.
Some of us are heading to Vegas really soon, so there'll be no snow out in the desert.
I hope not.
No. Yeah, he might come back. There's going to be snow, Danny. Listen, let's get into Tiger Woods here in a little bit as he gets rolling at the State Farm Classic. Did I say that right? Is it Classic?
Yeah, his debut. His debut this week.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll talk Tiger here in a minute. Exciting. But you're a huge Nebraska basketball fan, and we always talk hoops this time of year. And
oh yeah,
man, what's your diagnosis here of this program? We just talked to Jacob Padilla. I had my thoughts with bracketology coming out, and kind of the big picture talk on Miles, where you got the fan base right now screaming. The screaming stopped because you got a win against Indiana. You played well against Sparty, but You can't handle success or that near success, and then you go Duff one against Rutgers. That's going to happen, okay? Michigan State will have a bad loss. Duke has a bad loss, okay?
Almost a couple of them.
A couple of them, okay? You're going to have Virginia step on themselves at some point. Teams are going to lose in conference because they'll take a night off.
Exactly.
It's just too hard. The discussion right now is, like, when you project the rest of this season, is what can Nebraska get done at home, first and foremost?
Exactly.
Who can they steal one from on the road? And then do they drop to Penn State or Illinois on the road? Because those are still two awful road trips looming.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't do themselves any favors.
What weighs more? A good win? Say you would have had them against Maryland and Iowa, or the bad loss? When we're looking at a scale here, what do you think's more memorable, the big win or the head-scratching loss? And you should get credit for a win on the road.
No question.
And Nebraska is getting credit for, wow, they should have had those. They were the better team. They had game control. I think that's why they're an 8 seed in bracketology right now.
I agree.
I mean,
you know, they've done everything they're supposed to up to this point, mm-hmm. up to the Rutgers game. I mean, they
played well enough to win some big games.
They
too.
Did. I mean, I think that's why they're so high in one of the polls out mm-hmm. there, is because, again, they beat a quality opponent on the road. They've played really well against some teams at their place, mm-hmm. and this one didn't do him any favors. I know that.
No.
This is a game that you have to, if you're a quality team, you go take care of your business against a team like Rutgers. You know, not to say anything against them, but you're just better than they are, and you should beat them if you just play okay. You don't have to play great. Just play okay. You can't play poorly.
No.
And it's like, yeah, you're going to have some games that you are going to lose.
You're not going to be on all the time.
No.
Understood.
But you still shouldn't lose a record.
What are you seeing, man? And you bump into folks. They'll come see you for lessons or some indoor training this time of year out at Wilderness. And, I mean, you hear things. I mean, what's the buzz? What's the vibe? I know what I'm hearing. I know what the mailbag says. I know what the callers say. I know what the emails say. And there's the old saying, when Joe Mama Schmidt would look at me and my brother, and we've been bickering all day, she's like, I'm up to here, right?
Yeah.
That crazy look in her eye.
Yeah.
And it was time to knock it off, or she would knock us off.
Oh, I remember that.
You've got a frustration, man, at a high level with the head coach and his program right now, because they're not doing what they've been told they're supposed to do.
This is a unique one. I think people are frustrated because they want them to be successful.
They want it to happen.
They want it to happen because they're good quality kids. You know, they've seen what they can do.
It's a nice roster.
It is. And they really enjoy them or like them, mm-hmm. whatever it is you want to say. So the frustration is because they want them to succeed so badly, mm-hmm. you know, and when they don't, you get frustrated.
You take it out on somebody.
Yeah.
And named Tim.
Yeah. So I think that
Tim the Pinata.
Yeah. That's one of the bad things about it, is because, again, they want them to succeed, and the expectations going in ramped everything up, because it's like, man, they have a great roster. They have the potential. Man, they could actually win the conference. And it's like, could they really? It's like, yeah, they're talented.
Based on paper.
Yeah, but paper's paper, man. Uh-huh. Paper burns fast. So it's like you still got to go out there and put the product, you know, on the floor. So, I mean, I have a couple of takes. I think this team is trying so hard, just like the fan base.
To be what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, to want them to win. I think this team is trying so hard to actually make that happen. And, you know, sometimes the harder you try, the worse it gets, you know, because everything becomes so much that more important. You know, it's like every shot, man, I got to make this. I need to make this, do this, do this. So the pressure mounts and mounts and mounts. And pretty soon the pressure is so much that you can't even function. And then it's like then you're trying to always be the hero and make this shot to make it happen and do this and do this and do this. And then when it's not happening, you know, you try harder. The harder you try, then the more you miss, then it's like, what the heck is going on? So it's like, I mean, they just need to go play basketball like they know how to play basketball. Not any more, not any less.
Just please yourself.
Just play like you know you're capable of playing, and they'll be just fine because they are extremely talented. It's fun to watch when they're rolling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I think the other thing, too, is I think they're gassed.
And they're just dead dog tired already?
I think they're pretty gassed out, you know. People are figuring out how to play them, man. They beat them up. You get, you know, they've been playing great defense. The harder you have to work on defense, it's harder to play offense.
Sure.
You know, they come up a little short, you know. I mean, they're just doing things that I watched in the first 10 games of the year that they just don't look like the first 10 games of the year.
It comes down to pressing and fatigue.
That's what I think it is. They're trying so hard.
You've coached Division I athletes for 20 plus years. You know you're around kids. You know what kind of the symptoms and the signs are.
Yeah.
And you've got two guys we need to talk about here before we get to Tiger next segment. You got Palmer and you got Roby. Roby is a guy that, you know, it's kind of all or nothing, right, with him. And it's not from an effort standpoint. It just comes down to being able to stay on the court and impact the game. And then you have Palmer, who guys have adjusted to him. And he is missing some shots. He's also carried this team to victory more times than we can count in his career.
No question.
And also, defensively, there's been lapses there that's affected the other four dudes. And it was very paramount in Piscataway on Monday night with just these defensive breakdowns.
Yeah. And I think some of it, too, is, man, they're a break team. But you got to take care of the rebound before you get on a break. But they're taking off on breaks before they even have taken care of that. So they got to get back to some basic stuff that you do to allow them to play like they're capable of.
Mike Shewhart is in. Shuey, it's Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio. We'll wind down Tiger Woods and the State Farm Classic. We'll get into that. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
All right, Mike Shewhart is in studio. Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal Star, going to talk some Husker football in 10 minutes. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, Will Bauer. And let's talk Tiger Woods, State Farm Classic. All right. Here is one of the many questions as we start Tiger Talk. Can he get to number one again?
He's back.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Get there. Play well.
No question.
What is in store for him tomorrow and through the weekend?
I mean, he's played some really good golf on that golf course, and he knows it. He likes it, you know. I'm sure if he's healthy, which it sounds like he is, you haven't heard any setbacks that he's had.
I've screwed this up. I think it's the Farmer Insurance Open. I've been giving our friends at State Farm and their khakis love. Forgive me.
They appreciate it.
The Farmer's Insurance Open, Torrey Pines.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's ready. You know, he's prepared for it. Like I said, I don't think I have not heard anything about his health. So, you know, if he's healthy, he'll play well. I mean, he's just one of those guys. He's one of the greatest players ever.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like if he's healthy after the end of the season that he had, you know, things are back, feeling confident about where he's at, his health. I mean, he'll be a force. He's had a lot of good success on that golf course.
So. He has. Do you feel good about what he's going to do with his short game?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What are your feelings, though? I mean, who are some guys to watch this 2019 season?
You got the same old guys in there.
Right, but is there somebody that's going to rise up? Because you have somebody usually make the run, they turn the corner,
yeah.
They perform, and they're in contention.
You got some guys last year that their name got up in there, and that's usually how it works, mm-hmm. is as their name kind of filters in there, you hear their name every now and then. It gets them a taste of what that is. They get comfortable in that situation. And, it, you know, like a Tommy Fleetwood, mm-hmm. a lot of good tournaments last year. There's a kid, Abraham Anser.
Okay.
Played for Oklahoma. I mean, his name's popping up there. Gary Woodland's another one.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he's had a great start. So you just see some of those guys that names pop up there. You got your old traditional guys. Matt Kuchar, it's like, come on, that guy won Hawaii. He's just ageless. Tiger and DJ and Jason Day and you know, your typical guys you see there all the time. But you'll see some guys that were knocking on the door last year getting close that will sneak in there, you know.
All right, recruiting-wise, you love recruiting. We'll wrap with this. How do you think Nebraska closes? They got 4 spots left.
Good. I think it's like – what they're selling, what mm-hmm. they're doing, where they're going. I mean, I would sure be excited to want to mm-hmm. be part of that. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you could see what's going on, you know, from an offensive standpoint especially. And you got especially Noku, the guy that they're the big receiver.
Yeah, I'm anxious to talk more about him if he gets in.
I mean, heck, you got a spot open of a – 1,000-yard receiver that just left.
And a 6'5 guy would make me think a little more purified.
Exactly.
Right? Get me the big dude in the end zone.
And he, you know, he knows what their offense did last year, and mm-hmm. they got a spot for a big 6'5 receiver.
And he was a touchdown machine down at Miami in the red zone.
Yeah, so it's like...
I'm thinking of Cager, my bad, but no. Same body type.
I would be excited about wanting to jump on board.
Get in. Should we hang out if you want? We'll wind down this first hour, and Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal Star, will talk some recruiting, some roster stuff with Nebraska as they move forward. Great to be with you on a Wednesday with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you back in. It's Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Mike Shewhart sitting in. And Will Bauer running the controls. We say hi to Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal star. Parker, it's been a while, man. How you been?
I'm doing well. I wondered if I did something wrong or something. It has been a while.
It's just not quite.
It's always kind of football season, but it's not quite football season.
Listen, man, you can do a lot of things wrong, and you're still getting that phone call. I'm just appreciative you answer it. It's all good. Hey, it is getting closer to signing day part 2 right now, and I really liked your story on the Journal Star, just kind of assessing where things are at for Nebraska. Let's run it down for the football fans out there, that it is always Nebraska football season. From a spots left standpoint, let's go there. What's your projections and thoughts on just what's available? How many spots are left for 2019 for Nebraska?
Yeah, there's 4 spots left, and the way the NCAA rules work, it's not so much about the roster limit, you know, 85 scholarship guys, but it's more about how many new scholarship players you can bring in per year. So Nebraska's got 4 spots left, but that includes if they want to try to add a transfer after spring ball or over the summer. You saw, you know, they could have, it was late enough when Tristan Jebbia left, but they probably could have, if the academic calendar lined up, you know, they could have used that even as late as, you know, late August. Mm. And so if they want to save a spot for a transfer at some point, that would mean they've only got room for 3 more guys. you know, that would be sort of signing on signing day here in February. So four spots total, I would bet that they sign three more in early February.
So you're betting that they do want to keep a reserve spot for a grad transfer, and preference, is that for a wide receiver? Is that for a pass rusher? Is that for a lineman? What do you think the priority list is at?
Yeah, I think any of those. And I think what they'd like to do is, you know, spring ball will be really important for determining where that ultimately goes. I mean, maybe you get through spring ball and, you know, you like where Hunter Miller and Will Farniak and Cameron Juergens are at, but they get together as a staff and decide that if they can find a center boy, that they might be really dangerous. Or maybe it's pass rush. Maybe a good, you know, someone doesn't like where they're standing somewhere else and they leave, and you can get a college-ready player, you know, in a spot like outside linebacker. So I think that's the point of holding one to wait until after spring ball, is building in that flexibility of being able to address your needs after spring ball and figure out where you're best off using one more spot.
Husker football thoughts from Parker Gabriel at Husker Extra PG is where you follow him on Twitter. Now, we're talking about three spots, and Nebraska is in hot pursuit. What's your feel right now on Charles Njoku? He's this three-star wideout from Jersey. Love his size. I love Jersey kids because they're just tough and rugged, and they can play ball, and quite frankly, most of them end up at Penn State, at Rutgers, and then on Sundays in the NFL. Do you think Nebraska is in a good spot here when it comes to this arm wrestling match between them and UCLA?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, obviously, he got he was on an official visit to UCLA last weekend and got an offer while he was there. It's the first, at least, you know, there was a guy, I think there were a couple guys maybe just in the last week or so of the cycle last year, but this is a real Scott Frost versus Chip Kelly for heads up kind of for a guy. So that's an interesting subplot to it. But, yeah, I think that they do. I think Nebraska wants him. I think we'll know relatively soon, maybe this week, you know, before Nebraska hosts any more guys on official visits, where he – you know, what he intends to do, Charles Njoku. And so, yeah, I like where they're at. I like his game. Obviously, the size is something that Nebraska doesn't really have on the roster right now. So he's definitely of the orbit of guys that are still in play for what I would imagine will be three spots. I think he might be at the top of the list.
Okay, who else is in play at wide receiver? Say Njoku says, you know, I like Chip Kelly and Chip wearing a visor versus Frost's hair. It just does it for me. I'm just throwing things at the dartboard at this point. But do they then go, is Cager, the kid out of Miami, still a reality? Where are they, and what's the board look like, in your opinion, at wide receiver after Njoku?
I mean, it's not to say that it couldn't happen. I really don't think they're going to take a graduate transfer or a transfer like Lawrence Cager before, like at this point in time. I think that would be a post-spring situation. So then I guess, I mean, it could happen. I'm not saying categorically that it can't, but I would imagine that if it's not Charles Njoku, then it's a determination on if they like Damarian Houston, the receiver who visited last weekend from Oklahoma City, enough to use one of their last spots on him, and then otherwise maybe that bumps receiver up the grad transfer wish list, so to speak, over the summer.
All right, let's talk outside linebacker. You have Dylan Jordan. He's a kid that Nebraska's been in home with since the contact periods opened back up. Also, you have Stephen Parker. He checked out Nebraska earlier in January. Give me an update, a thought process here on both those outside backers.
Yeah, my read there would be that it seems a little bit like it's Dylan Jordan's spot to take if he wants it. So, and the reason I say that is because, you know, Frost was just there earlier this week. He and Eric Schnander went down to Pittsburgh, Kansas. They locked in. He's visiting officially this coming weekend. And then he says he's shutting down his recruitment on Monday next week. So the timing there sort of lines up. One of the things I think would be interesting is if Stephen Parker, the kid from Dallas, from South Oak Cliff High, you know, if he calls and says, I want in, what do they do? You know, do they take two? Do they use two spots on that and then figure out, you know, if they're going to maybe then they just fill up and take four or I don't know. That's sort of that's the puzzle. Those are the puzzle pieces, and that's the calculus that becomes really important this time of year. So I guess I would say that Dylan Jordan's probably the most likely. It's Sony Finua and Stephen Parker are the guys that have visited already. But to me, it seems like maybe it's Dylan Jordan to take if he wants it this weekend.
Parker Gabriel's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, and good stuff from him on Husker Football at Husker Extra PG on Twitter is where you follow him. You read him with the Journal Star. Put your headset on for a second, Parker. Take your lid off and put your headset on.
Okay.
Do you like Jordan's all around game as an outside backer better than Parker? Do you think they're equal, but the edge is Jordan? I mean, give me a read here as to what each strength is for Parker and for Jordan, if you could.
Yeah, I think Stephen Parker is a little bit bigger. He's listed at 6'4 and 230 or so. So he's a little bit bigger. He's played against competition that's probably a little bit easier to just turn on his film and know what you're looking at because he played at a big school in Dallas and all that. But I mean, if you watch, you know, Dylan Jordan's a guy that, I mean, he runs sub 11 in the 100, and when you watch him, I mean, they use him at running back in Pittsburgh, Kansas too, and he's just one of those type of athletes that jumps off the page when you turn the film on. And so I don't know, they're probably slightly different players. I think Nebraska probably likes the athleticism of both of them. I don't know. I mean, you saw what kind of player Caleb Tanner was in high school, and he played a lot, obviously, as a freshman, but physically it takes a lot to be able to stand up to the rigors of the Big Ten. And so I think you're probably buying upside long-term with either of them rather than necessarily a day one impact type guy. But you know, I think they're two good options to have at this late stage in the cycle.
Let's talk Matthew Polamau, and that's the cousin there of Noah Pola-Gates. I know his official visit is scheduled for Nebraska this weekend. Is SC the leader in the clubhouse? Can Nebraska flip him? I know he's a 300-pound defensive tackle that just has a really good burst off the football. Give me a percentage here on where Nebraska sits with him, if you could.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. I think it's really a wild card. The thing that I've caught myself doing a little bit this week is, you know, they offered him in December, and he and Noah Pola-Gates, his cousin, were talking about, you know, Noah Pola-Gates mentioned that maybe if Matthew was coming up here to visit, he'd come with them late in January. The thing that is interesting about this is that we all learned about Noah Pola-Gates being committed to Nebraska just on Saturday night during the Polynesian Bowl, but because he's been signed since December 19th, they've been working this out and thinking about how this works, and they've known exactly what the situation is, and so has Nebraska's coaching staff for a lot longer than we have. So it's not like, so in reality, even though we think, oh wow, now Noah Pola-Gates is in the boat, I wonder what the deal is with his cousin, that's what Nebraska and those two guys in that family, they've known how the board looks and how their situation looks for more than a month now. And so I sort of wonder if everybody knows that he has a spot, or maybe everybody knows, you know, and that's directly involved, that it's sort of a wait and see. I don't really know. It's sort of a wild card to me. So I definitely think there's a real chance, though, that he winds up at Nebraska.
Wow. That'd be a huge get. And Nebraska's done such a good job. The skill spots have gotten the headlines, but the lines of scrimmage is what you're waiting to see jump up if you're a Nebraska fan. Last thought here, Parker, and awesome info today, man. I appreciate your time. Bivens, where's he at with Nebraska? I know he was in recently, really good athlete. We're talking about a numbers game right now with three spots left and you're reserving one. He's kind of your next best available, but he'd be a nice get for Nebraska. What's your impression of Bivens?
Yeah, I think Ryan Helm really likes him, obviously. You know, he went and visited him. They brought him on an official. The key to me, as far as I know, I don't think Scott Frost has been to Dayton, Ohio to see him yet. So if Frost goes there this week or next, you'll know that he's really in the mix for one of those last three spots. I wonder, you know, if they don't get, say Charles Njoku goes to UCLA, maybe at that point, if they have John Bivens graded as the best player left that they're in on, maybe that's when you see it happen. I don't know. I mean, it's, maybe they love him enough that he's got the green light whenever. But again, there's a lot. This is tough on the kids because there's a lot of stuff going on and time's getting short, and there's only so many scholarships out there, and so you never want to call a kid a backup plan or, oh, you know, he's on the back burner or whatever, because it really matters to them, you know, and it's important. It's a big time in their lives. So I'll be interested to see what happens with them. And I know, I mean, one thing I know is that Ryan Held really likes his long-term potential.
I lied to you. Quick last thought here. From an attrition standpoint, any crazy names that may be departing the program? And you don't have to scoop yourself here on that. I'm just saying, are there any surprises coming down the pike, do you think, name-wise?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we have a good idea of what the transfer portal or database or whatever you want to call it looks like now. There's no surprises on Nebraska's end. The question will really be on that front. I mean, I think the proof will be in the pudding through spring ball and then after, because I think that's when you'll see. If you're a guy who doesn't know where he stands exactly in the program now, you might as well stay, because a lot of these kids, you know, graduate transfers that not till May or, you know, or whatever. They've started school for the semester, so they're here for the semester. So you might as well go into spring ball and see if you can't win yourself a job or put yourself in a better position and then reevaluate after that. So yeah. I think the next wave of attrition will come after spring ball. But at this point, there's no big surprise. It would be a big surprise to me if there was someone, you know, a big name in there somewhere.
Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal star at Husker Extra PG. Parker, we'll get caught up next time. And thanks again for giving us a few minutes, bud.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, Trudy.
See you, bud. There he is, Parker Gabriel. Good stuff. There's your Husker rundown on recruiting, on where Nebraska's at. Love having a chance to talk with Parker. Love getting Greg Smith on the horn as well. And, you know, it is fluid. Right? I mean, it is fluid right now. And Parker laid it out for you. Four spots, three really open spots. Should we jump in here? Because, I mean, you're a recruiting fiend. And I mean that as a respectful comment. You love it.
He made a really good comment, is that, you know, you call these guys like backup plans and stuff like that. It's like, man, it is really tricky. Because
think about navigating through that as a coach, because
exactly.
You're going to be honest about who you like best and what fits best, but you got to have a B and C and a D, even though these kids are real people aren't B level or C plan.
Exactly, you know, and they want to be A, they don't want to be the D or the C, but you can't, you know, they don't know that, so it's very, you have to be very, you have to manipulate that, you know, as you talk with these kids and go to these kids. And he made another great point, is that, you know, it's when Coach Frost goes and shows up at your door, he's probably pretty serious that you're one that they want.
He loves warm weather and golf, but he likes football players better.
Yeah, he does, a lot better.
Well, we'll get into, is it justice for New England versus Kansas City? The mysterious story of the green laser. Man. More thoughts on Husker Hoops. Can join us 466-3776. Hail Varsity continues.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back in. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. So maybe you saw this story, and I know there are Chiefs fans out there. Some of you went, some of you absorbed the heartbreak. I know there's a large anti-New England sentiment, but you have the NFL investigating what went down in the AFC Championship game. How many of you had that buddy that was crazy in high school? And think of the student section, right? And when I was going to Southeast, you had J.R. Edwards and Corey Adams just kick butt and take names, state tournaments, their junior and senior years. I mean, just a really good time to be a Southeast Knight fan, right? And then later years with Baugh and the Roods and Mielheisen, incredible squads too. Coach Smith's phenomenal. So we didn't have like an air horn or a laser. We had somebody in a robe that would, until we got stopped, kind of work his way down in front of the basket and just kind of do a quick robe check and open it up. It was like the curtain of shame in Arizona State before the curtain of shame, and there was no curtain. It was just some guy in a robe. Now he had like shorts on and a I'm outside wife beater, a tank top. But still, you just don't know. You're going to roll the dice. It was pretty good. So I liked that. And like one of my favorite movies is Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. It was pretty good. And Robert Downey Jr. would be the guy in the swim meet, the dive meet, that would bring the air horn in. You'd just lay on that horn and it'd screw up Chip or Chad or whoever the mullet-wearing diver in Speedos was, and he'd screw up his dive. We have now gone to level 7 in Kansas City with a laser pointer. It's not the first time you've had a laser pointer brought to a game, but this is, dare I say, football karma, where you have Tom Brady, you have footage, and it's through the Kansas City news channels that they'll have a still video shot of Brady, and you'll see this green dot on him. And one of his interceptions, the interception after Edelman may or may not have muffed the punt, there's and you see Brady like shut his eyes when he threw the pick. They ran it back. But the still photo, video photo, had the laser printer. So this happened 2 or 3 times, where Brady's got the laser on him. It's green, it's not red. And I'm wondering if they're going to be able to pinpoint where it came from. Is that something you would stoop to as a fan? You want it so bad. You want your team to go to the Super Bowl. You want your team to go to the NCAA tournament. You want your team to win a Big Ten championship. Would you ever suspect Nebraska fan drop into that depth? I don't think so. I mean, Nebraska fan gets cranked up at PBA for Creighton, and it can be a bit of an angry, toxic mob in a good way. It can be more of a hostile environment. Memorial Stadium's going to get cranked back up, where it'll be a tough place to play and win again because of the sound and loudness. And Nebraska's good about kind of Jedi mind tricking their opponents by telling them good game and nice work.
Exactly.
So it's taken the edge away.
That's right.
But from a laser pointer standpoint, I mean, those things aren't cheap. We all had them in science class. We tried to blind each other as adolescents. My kid has one. I think a Breaking Bad, where Walt was able to drop off his $9.6 million because he had Badger and Skinny P out there in the wilderness with the laser pointers, and you think you got two hitmen. But that is, listen, I'm all for home field advantage. That is a step too far, and I sound old and crusty saying it. Going laser pointer there to disrupt Tom Brady, I know Deflategate, I know Belichick's a cheater, yada, yada, yada. But that is, you got what you deserved, is what I'm saying. And I know there's a ton of Chief fans out there who hate Brady, hate New England. But, man, don't go laser pointer on the quarterback. Let your defense, who, yes, didn't sack him, lined up offsides, go make a play. And if the interception to Edelman, and that went off of his fingers more so than a bad throw, it was a little high. But was it high because of the laser?
That's interesting.
I'm serious. I mean, the NFL's investigating. New England has no comment.
That's one powerful laser there.
Well, right. Danny, jump in here as well, brother. I mean, you've seen this story. It is football karma at its finest, where you lost and you didn't deserve to win, and you kind of got what you deserved because you broke out the laser pointer, the green one. I didn't know they made green. Did they have the green laser pointer at your high school in Chicago?
I always just thought it was red.
Right. I thought they were all red. Green. I thought it's the only.
I got a green one.
You do?
I do have a green one.
Well, tell me, what do you do with it?
I use it for putting.
Okay. To distract?
Not to distract. I never thought about using it to distract. That might actually work.
That
now
might
that
work.
I think about it.
Well, think about people that are cat people. Like, they have cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of buying meth, they put their little laser pointer on the ground and watch the Morris, the cat, lose his mind trying to chase it down. But you have it. Okay. So
we use it for alignment.
Okay.
So
I should try that.
That's one of the skills that you have to have is can you actually line up correctly to what it is that you're trying to hit at?
Mm-hmm.
So as you line up, we put our laser on there, and it actually will tell you where you're lined up to go.
Mm.
So it's like, I think I'm lined up there, but the laser says you're a foot to the right, so probably got a little work to do. But and that's green. Mine's green.
Okay. Well, good.
So
this will... Is there a smidge of sympathy for New England because of this?
No, they won the game, man. And I'm not going to make excuses for Brady. I feel like he would have said something and made a big deal about it. He's not the most.
No way.
He's not on Philip Rivers level, but he's definitely all up in the ref's ears a lot of the time.
I agree.
He would have said something about it. And he didn't clearly. So I'm not going to make excuses for him on his interceptions. The first one was his fault. The other one was the receiver's fault. And then obviously the other one got taken away from the offsides. But I think the NFL should just be focusing on the referees and in the Saints game more so than this lighter.
So don't give Brady a break.
No, he's
okay,
fine.
Here's the other thing. You had Chris Hogan drop a pass deep in the fourth quarter. They found laser point footage on that play. And then when Rob Gronkowski set up that go-ahead with the fade route where Tony Romo's like, Gronk split out wide. They're throwing a fade to Gronk.
Exactly.
You know, and the whole world knew except for Eric Berry. We tried to get a piggyback ride. It was there as well. So there's three big play instances. Brady wouldn't say anything publicly, I don't think. Like post-game, if they would have lost, he would have said, yeah, I didn't make the plays. I shouldn't have thrown interceptions. I mean, that interception in the end zone was god-awful.
Yeah, that was brutal.
I would like to find footage. Mike, Sonny, Michelle, there was footage and a still pic of a laser pointer on Brady as he's trying to take the snap to hand off to Michelle. So this thing is real. Most egregious thing you did to distract ever? Did you do anything? I mean, you weren't like Buff fan throwing a full beer can. Packed at a snowball at Byron Bennett back in 91.
No, it was just mostly yelling from the stands, just like typical high school chanting, yelling.
Did
and, like,
believe?
If I knew the kid, I would say personal stuff, you know?
Oh, really?
Not like anything really bad, but like maybe an inside joke or
like
something.
Your sister's
like,
pretty hot.
Yeah, you could do that. So
everyone thinks so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, something funny, too. You got to get a rise out of the crowd. And even something personal where the guy knows what you're talking about so you can make him laugh while he's shooting the free throw. It'd be something more so like that too. But what about you?
Oh, there was stuff, and we'll have Andy Markowski on tomorrow. We may have to dive into this a little bit because he played when Nebraska was still in the Big 12 and Missouri was still there.
Yeah, I remember you telling me those stories a little bit.
Right. So you have remember the Antlers down at Missouri?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, they're evil.
Evil.
Very evil. Like, they kidnapped a little Red and, like, popped him.
Yeah,
evil.
They,
which is kind of cool,
that's
actually.
That's pretty funny.
No, he got abducted and drug up into their student section, I think, and then during the 97 game. Like, all of a sudden, little Red disappeared, and someone shivved him, which I don't like
that's
to
hilarious.
Blow up, though. I don't like little Red. I'm sorry, okay? But, I mean, they'll find out personal info. It goes beyond pranked phone calls at 3 a.m. to your hotel room, like that used to happen in the 80s.
That happened at a high school game. We were playing against a private school in our area, and it was
you
like
you didn't
really
go to a
bad.
Private school?
Of course not.
Ferris?
No, it was just they dug up real personal information about, you know, long story short, like one of the players' dads accidentally ran over their dog, so they were chanting the dead dog's name while the guy was shooting the free throw. It was bad.
Oh my.
I don't think it was this funny for the kid shooting the free throw.
No, but this is pretty good. This is a new low. This is evil. But it is so funny. So like,
Bambi.
Yeah. It's like someday I'm going to have that talk with Carson that Roz the Labradoodle is too much to keep alive. So we're going to have that talk and we're going to say adios and we'll make a rug out of her or something. I love her, but she gets it. I get it. Right. I mean, it is what it is, but for someone to, you know, lose a pet like that, and then they're like, yeah, Baxter.
That's brutal.
That's pretty good though.
It is like, and you got to think that's like, the guy probably knows. It was probably one of his friends from, like, middle school, and then he told the rest of the student section, so someone had to be singled out for it.
Yeah. Would you sell somebody out like that?
I mean, no. I mean, I think it's...
Depends on
I'm trying to think, like, what kind of situation it would be, but no, because everyone would be doing it, and I don't think it would be a situation where I would even know the guy enough to, like, he would ask me for it, so...
Like, it got really, really bad. Fans towards the crowd... Or I should say fans towards the bench. Like, I talked to a couple people. Nebraska played Southern Miss down there in Hattiesburg. And it was a Thursday night game, and Nebraska won, and they just kind of smacked around Southern Miss. But, it was just awful. Like, the confines of the mosquito pit down there were right on top of the bench, and Nebraska coaches were getting propositioned for sex. By just loaded college. I mean, it was brutal.
Oh,
I wasn't there, but enough people were on the sideline that night. They're like, yeah, that was... forget Columbia, forget Boulder. I'm never going to Southern Miss again.
The worst ones were the high school hockey games, though, by far. I can't say some of the stuff that was said there.
Well, the dog thing at the free throw line is pretty good. Bad. A Jock Doc's on its way.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. Now, the real question is, one of the good guys in the NFL, Alex Smith, how is he doing? Let's do an Alex Smith update. Horrific injury with the hit, the break. The severity, where are we at now? It's been a few months since Alex Smith got hit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a little bit of an update today. I'd seen that he's been spending some time around the team, showing up at a few sporting events, just kind of showing his face. It hasn't been out much in a while. Just an update on him. I'm pretty sure you all probably talked about him. I don't think I talked on that show. Maybe Dr. Tavis. But talking about his injury, you know, initially, obviously a terrible-looking injury, you know, reviewing that, had a injury to the tibia, that's the shin bone, fractured that, had an injury where it unfortunately had poked through the skin. We called it an open fracture. It used to be called a compound fracture. Our terminology is an open fracture. And that's essentially what it had, devastating injury. It sounds like it was pretty extensive. Obviously, we weren't there, to see it, but just some of the reports and stuff that have filtered out, it sounded like it was a crack that kind of involved the whole tibia. And anyway, went through surgery, all that kind of stuff. And really, the big thing there is, the tibia fracture in and of itself, a bad injury to have as a professional athlete. Number two, probably the most concerning thing with him was it was an open fracture at the time. And so, giving you an update, he had a really long, protracted course in the hospital. He ended up getting an infection, which is not surprising. It was an open injury, extensive injury. And so from that, a lot of time in the hospital, treating antibiotics, treating the infection, probably had some wound healing issues going on. And so now he's out, kind of doing his thing, recovering. But there's a lot of things, involved in that injury that, really put him in a difficult spot in terms of his return. And that's kind of the big thing on people's minds now is, will Alex be able to make it back? And that's kind of the big question mark.
When we talk about the tibia fracture, that's an open wound, and that's when the bone comes through the skin, and you have just that severity, right? I mean, the pain and then the doubt and the panic that can happen with an injury like that. And you look at the type and style of quarterback Alex Smith is, just he's mobile and was a zone read guy for Urban, and he's done well. I mean, he's done a great job but not ever just to get him over the hump type job, you know, with San Francisco and then even with Kansas City. Good enough to win a lot of ball games, but not go far into the postseason. And Washington was trying to bridge their quarterback situation. With infection, kind of break that down for me. Explain how infection can and does set in. Not trying to gross anyone out, but I'm curious to know, with an open wound, how and why it gets infected like it does, and then the procedure and process post breakage, open breakage, and then how do you eradicate that infection?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, when you have these injuries, again, just in and of itself, tibia injuries, you know, tibia fracture, bad injury, but you take the open piece, you know, where the bone comes through the skin, there's a lot of trauma that has to occur for that to happen. Okay, so one, you have just that trauma, which results in lots of stretching of the tissues, tearing of the tissues, tearing of the tissues over the top of the bone called the periosteum. And that in and of itself is very traumatic. And then obviously you break the skin. You know, and what's really important to think about, you know, just anatomically is, you know, the skin's function, you know, for your body, the infection barrier that it really is. I think people probably underestimate the value of their skin. But, you know, having the skin, having just an amazing barrier to all these infections, once you break that and any type of bacteria, you know, that's on the skin and in the environment can get inside the system, it's a huge challenge for your immune system to try to get rid of that. In particular, when it starts to get into the, you know, inside of bones, underneath this kind of tissue called periosteum, which sits over the top of the bone, you know, inside kind of the muscular tissues, now you've basically introduced all this bacteria that, again, normally lives on your skin, but also is out there when you, you know, fall in the field on grass, that kind of stuff. You take and you introduce that into your deep tissues, bone in particular, and one, it can cause, you know, a life-threatening infection because it can get into your bloodstream, and that's a huge issue. Number two, once you get into those deep tissues like that, it's really hard to eradicate those kind of infections. So typically with those, it's a kind of a long course of IV antibiotics and then even potentially some oral antibiotics after that. And it's a long course, weeks, sometimes months of those things just to get rid of it. And so, you know, when you look at kind of an infection spectrum, you know, bone infections are bad things to have. It takes a lot of work to get rid of those. Sometimes you can't ever totally get rid of it. Sometimes you have to resect bone to get rid of it. So it's a big deal. Could potentially lead to amputation, which I know sounds, you know, crazy in this situation. But, you know, Alex, if they can't, you know, manage the infection, the bone infection in particular, you could end up with an amputation if it becomes threatening to the rest of your body. Mm. So that's where that really comes into play. That's why it's so hard. One, we're so worried about it. Two, that's why open fractures are such a big deal. And then three, it's just such a challenge to get rid of those kind of deep, soft tissue infections. And that's really kind of the battle that he faces, at least from that perspective. And that's a totally different perspective of how's he going to do, you know, physically getting back to sport. You know, for him right now, I think the main goal is to get rid of the infection so he can do normal life with a limb. Hmm.
Does it matter, natural grass or field turf? And I ask that because field turf's got the ground-up rubber. Is that more prone to cause infection when something like this happens, or does it matter you're going to get infected with an open wound either way?
Yeah, great question. Actually, it's really interesting to think about that. So, you know, with the turf stuff, I mean, obviously, you know, there's bacteria that's there, maybe a little bit different bacteria that's, you know, normally on regular field grass. When you talk about from, you know, from an orthopedic perspective, you know, what's kind of more scary to have or more, more potent, if you will, in terms of infections? Well, it's the infections that kind of bacteria that kind of grow in like mud and dirt and those kinds of things. So if you look at our orthopedic literature, you kind of grade these open fractures, you know, in different levels. And once you kind of start getting into like mud and dirt and, you know, real soil, things start to get a little bit more dicey. Things get, you know, a little bit more worrisome. So from that perspective, yes, I think real grass, you know, having the potential to be in like mud or dirt, that kind of stuff, is actually probably more potent from a bacteriologic standpoint than, you know, being on the turf where, yeah, there's a little bit of, you know, dust and dirt on there, but it's not truly like mud or dirt that has different bacteria in it. And those type of bacteria that are in soil are really hard to get rid of. And so from that perspective, you know, if you're going to have an open fracture, I would rather have mine on turf as opposed to, you know, real grass with mud and actual, you know, real soil.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, about a minute left here. The next steps for Alex Smith as far as running, throwing, what's the timeline look like?
Yeah, no, for something like that, one, just getting the healing, it's going to be a slow healing process. You know, typically tibia fractures heal pretty quick, 6-8 weeks, and usually a pretty well-healed tibia after, you know, a surgical intervention that's not open. You take an open fracture, it may take 4 to 6 months for that to totally heal, which then it becomes an issue. When do you start running, jogging, that kind of stuff? It really is based on the infection. The healing rate could be 4 to 6 months before it even does any of that stuff. That's the big concern I would have. Number two, he may not heal this. So you have an open fracture, that risk of not healing it, we call it a non-union, delayed union, that may happen for him. And if that's the case, then you get, you know, 6-8 months down the road, it's not healed. Now you got to go back for surgery for bone grafting, bone stimulators, all that kind of stuff. And so that's a whole other, you know, kind of deal for him. If I had to put a number on when's a real possibility for him to maybe make it back, he's probably looking at a year and a half. I'd be amazed if he'd get back in a year.
Dr. Brandon, we'll do this again. Thanks for the info.
Hey, you bet, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on a Wednesday. Don't forget, if you're in Lincoln, get out to see Nick and Rob, the Beer Show, a special Wednesday edition of the Beer Show at Granite City tonight, right at 6. They'll have amazing food and incredible, incredible beer selection. So get out there. We'll give you a chance at some Russ's tickets here. Give me the rundown of that, Danny.
So we got a pair of tickets to win today for the Russ's Wine and Food Experience, and that will be happening Friday, February 22nd.
Yep, and that'll be a Friday night, 5 to 8 at the Embassy. Food and Wine Experience from Russ's. We'll give you a chance at a pair of those tickets in one moment. A reminder to you about buckling up, clicking her ticket. Something's got to stop you, and it can be the windshield or your seatbelt when you're in an accident. Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down. Whether you're in the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or back seat, buckle up now, click it or ticket, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, Will Bauer. And last night you had Michigan escape at home against Minnesota. Offensive rebound, last second shot. Kevin Kugler destroyed the call, and I mean that complimentary, just freaking awesome. So Michigan stays Michigan. And that was impressive. You have some other games going on tonight around the Big Ten, Purdue and Ohio State. Does Purdue kind of keep their role going at 12-6? The Boilers are their favorite on the road at Ohio State. You have Wisconsin at Illinois. Whiskey's -4 in that. Daddy, you got a couple of favorites tonight, either in the Big Ten or elsewhere?
Yeah, those are two good games I was looking at. And I was telling you before, I saw a lot of people who were riding Illinois. They first opened up at +6, now at +4. I mean, they play aggressive at home, but to cover 4, I don't know. I mean, Wisconsin's here and there. They are coming off a big win.
Illinois is one of those teams that just donkey punch a couple teams a
year
at home.
I guess I'd say Illinois covering, but Wisconsin wins by maybe 2 or 3 would be my guess. And then for the other game, that one is really just...
No way.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just staying away
no
from that.
No way am I touching that, and Purdue should win, but Ohio State's kind of due.
Exactly, so that's why I would lean Ohio State, because of that. But Purdue obviously is a better team, but it's college basketball and conference play, so Ohio State would just win for that reason.
Yeah, let's get you a pair of tickets to the Russ's Food and Wine Experience. February 22nd, 5 to 8 at the Embassy. Caller 8 right now. These tickets are, though they're not cheap, because it's going to be an incredible event. You think of food, you think of wine, you think of chefs, you think of just a great experience. Caller 8, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can dial in now. Caller 8 gets the Russ's Market Food and Wine Experience. Going to be at the Embassy Suites in Lincoln the 22nd of February. That's a money Friday night. And go get some food, get some wine, and enjoy your time That's pretty good stuff. Tomorrow, we'll run down Brandon Vogel. Tomorrow, we'll get in touch with Andy Markowski. And maybe a surprise. We'll just leave it at that. Big thanks to Jacob Padilla. Talking Husker Hoops. Parker Gabriel, awesome, from the Journal Star, hitting on some recruiting and some Nebraska football odds and ends. Good stuff seeing Shuey. Thanks to Will Bauer. Big thanks to Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt. Talk to you next time on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.